Greetings, and welcome to A1 Insights, the home for candid nursing conversations, where we discuss what you need to know with nurse experts and colleagues who provide reproductive healthcare. I'm Bria Anokise, Associate Director of Publications at A1, a Lamaze Certified Childbirth Educator and mom of three. My pronouns are she, her. Today, it is my privilege to welcome one of our amazing A1 members, who's also a co-host of this podcast, Shannon Francois, clinical nurse educator, labor and delivery nurse, wife, and mother of twin girls. We are both delighted to welcome our special guest for the podcast relaunch, midwife and Dr. Jessica Brumley, pronouns she, her. She's been a midwife for 20 years and is currently the Division of Midwifery Director at the University of South Florida in Tampa. Today, we're highlighting the International Day for Maternal Health and Rights, April 11th, and discussing Dr. Brumley's passion for the kind of respectful care all birthing persons deserve. Now, Shannon, I'll turn the podcast over to you.
Well, it's morning here. I'm Shannon, as Bria said, and I'm excited to talk to you, Dr. Brumley, about respectful maternity care. I attended one of your respectful maternity care training sessions through the FPQC Mother-Focused Care Initiative that we are currently doing at the hospital where I work. And I really was moved by that training session, and I was excited to bring that information to the providers and the staff at my hospital. You know, one of the things that really hit me was we're in a room of nurses, educators, directors, managers, and you asked us all to write down some type of violence or disrespect that we had experienced in the workplace. And we put them all up on these giant post-it notes on the wall, and we read them out loud. And for me, you know, and I think everybody else in the room, we listened to those things and we all kind of nodded our heads. And these are things that are commonplace in our work environment. And they were all things that if you read them out loud to somebody that didn't work in our area, they might be shocked. And unfortunately, we are experiencing those things, whether it's from a doctor, another staff member, someone else in the hospital. We're experiencing those things on a regular basis. And I really am excited that you all at the FPQC are bringing that to light and asking all of these hospitals participating in the initiative to really buy in to what respectful maternity care means. So I'm really excited to talk to you about that. But first, I want to take a step back and talk to you a little bit about your career and your journey. So I know that you participated in the McNair Scholars and Fellowship Program. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that, how that played a role in your journey and how other people might get involved, people that might benefit from that program. It was really, really interesting, and it looked like it played a big part of your path, your career path.
Well, first, I just want to thank you for inviting me and for this opportunity to engage with A1 and you today. I found it really interesting that you picked up on this one thing, probably on my CV, that was really critical. Have you ever heard the story about how Chadwick Boseman had a person that helped him, and he didn't know who it was, pay for the opportunity to go study abroad. And that person ended up being Denzel Washington. But he had this like person who, who he didn't know. He was just like this anonymous donor, right? And I feel like I have this anonymous person out there who I still to this day don't know who it is, who nominated me for this program. And I was an undergraduate student at the University of South Florida, and you needed to be nominated. And the program was designed for people from underrepresented communities to pursue doctoral education in the sciences. And they paired you up with a mentor, and several different mentors throughout the program. The first one was just someone who was faculty, engaged in research, and was from a similar background as you. And so my family's from Puerto Rico, and they found me a Puerto Rican oncology scientist. And it was just about connecting on that human level. And then they paired you with someone in your major, someone who was doing research in your school. And so I was paired with faculty in the School of Nursing who was doing research on asthma in the pediatric population. And then your final mentor was someone who helped you engage in a research project. And so then I had a separate mentor who was a nurse but working in public health. And she helped to guide me through a chart review, right, a retrospective analysis where I looked at individuals who were seeking care in a midwifery clinic versus a physician practice and their follow-up. And so and their follow-up postpartum and presented that at a national conference. And then also locally at the university as well, where they held a research day. So that was really important to me because I learned the process of engaging in research, of presenting, right, formally in traveling, right, for a conference. It kind of laid that groundwork. In addition to those mentorships and that research experience, I was given an opportunity to apply for graduate studies and support for what that looked like. So they had GRE preparation courses for us, and they helped us to connect with other McNair scholars that were in other graduate schools so that when you went to go interview, you had someone, you know, personal to connect with in those places. So that was just, it was really foundational. It was, it really, 25 years ago, nurses weren't encouraged to directly seek doctoral education or even graduate education at all directly out of school. Go get a experience, many years of it, and then you can figure out what you want to do and pursue that next thing. But I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be a midwife, and I knew that. And so in my last year of nursing school, I was applying for midwifery education programs, which was more common now, but really not too common at that time. And then when I returned to Florida was hired on staff at the University of South Florida in their faculty practice, the person who hired me said, "Oh, I see you were a McNair scholar. I bet you want to work on your PhD now." She had been a mentor in the program. And I said, "Well, I mean, eventually I thought I would." And she said, "You should do that now." And I did. And I found that there was a fellowship for doctoral students who had been McNair scholars at an undergraduate level that helped pay for my doctoral education. So it came full circle. Not only did it prepare me for graduate school, but it ended up paying for most of my doctoral education. I, to this day, do not know who that person was who saw something in me and nominated me for that. But it was an amazing program. And I don't know if you know, but Ronald McNair was the first African-American astronaut, and he died in the Challenger explosion, which I remember seeing as a child. And so that's who this this program was named after. And my understanding of the program is that it has looked different in different places in where it's been implemented, but the goals of it have always been the same. Yeah.
It sounds like an amazing opportunity, an amazing program that they have set up that really kind of just guided you the whole way through. And you had some really great mentors and support systems throughout your journey. So you have to be nominated for this program. So really,
it's that's how it was then.
Right.
And the truth is, I don't know, you know, I don't know how it is now or how other institutions have implemented it. Yeah.
Okay. But if there's someone listening to this that maybe hears it and says, oh, that sounds like something that might help me or might be a career path that I'm interested in, they can just kind of research how that program is set up near them or at an institution near them. Okay. That's great. I love hearing about that because, as we all know, you know, college is expensive. Especially, you know, once you get to the graduate level, everything is extremely costly. So there's a lot of people in this country that don't have the ability to pay for college. And these programs, especially for someone that wants to get into medicine, for someone like you that knows that you want to be a midwife and you want it to do research and further your education, I think it's an amazing opportunity for anyone that's, you know, really interested. So that's awesome. So after that, I'm not sure, you know, the timeline, but you are involved with the FPQC, the Florida Perinatal Quality Collaborative, which creates these amazing quality initiatives for maternal child health in the state of Florida. And you are the the lead for the Respectful Maternity Care section of this initiative, this mother-focused care initiative. How did you get involved with the FPQC in the beginning?
I tell people half of leadership is just showing up. And so when the Florida Perinatal Quality Collaborative was beginning, they had their first meeting here in Tampa, and they're housed out of the College of Public Health here at the University of South Florida, where I'm employed. I showed up. It just seemed like an important meeting to be at. And I have served as the representative for the Florida affiliate of the American College of Nurse Midwives since I've been, I have been the affiliate president for some time. And I now sit on the National Board of Directors for the American College of Nurse Midwives and am the president-elect. And so leadership has always been very important to me, and engaging in one's professional organization has, is critical, you know, in my opinion. And so it was through that work that I was able to get involved in the Florida Perinatal Quality Collaborative. And I was just excited about everything that they were doing to address maternal health outcomes in our state. And they, you know, use quality improvement principles and established guidelines in order to implement evidence-based care. And so I just kept showing up at the meetings, and I'd go to the steering committee meetings, and I engaged in the hospital level work. Right, so I was on a hospital team, and then when they started doing the PROVIDE initiative, which was our reducing cesarean work, I offered to be on the state level work group for that, and I had an opportunity to travel around the state and teach labor support workshops to nurses throughout the state as part of that initiative. And had always been pretty vocal about what I thought was really critical for us to address as a state is really equity around birth, and had suggested speakers that I thought would, you know, be great speakers for our meetings, and had, you know, shared that sort of mission of mine with that group. And so as, you know, as they kind of come together and think about what are next steps and what are next initiatives, I think I'd been planting these seeds of something that, you know, I thought was really critical, and thankfully the birth community has been recognizing this, and other states have been doing birth equity work as well. And so when the FPQC decided that they would do this work, they asked if I would help to be one of the co-chairs of the group. And so they have myself, a certified nurse midwife, and then a physician, Dr. Karen Harris, as co-leads of this mother-focused care initiative.
And I love that you said you just showed up and you kept speaking up, because I think that's so important. You know, sometimes people refer to us as the pot stirrers, or, you know, the loud ones that won't sit down and be quiet. But I think in our field, we have to keep doing that. If we want to make change, you know, we have to keep speaking up and saying, no, this is not right. No, we need to make change. And I love organizations like the FPQC, where they'll listen to you and say, you're right, and let's make you the head of it. So I think, as far as like professional development is concerned, you know, for anyone that's really passionate about their field, I think that's important. Just keep showing up and speaking up and saying, you know, I see an issue and we need to make changes until somebody listens. As far as the respectful maternity care, that's something that you're very passionate about. In your field as a nurse midwife, what, you know, how did you become passionate about that? Is there, you know, something, you know, that you experienced, or has it always just been something you felt very strongly about?
It's the philosophy of midwifery. It you know, it's like the hallmarks of midwifery are everything that is respectful maternity care. Being present, being supportive, you know, being sure that, you know, the care is patient centered, that you're engaging in advocacy for your patient. And so I think that many people that go into midwifery have a little bit of fight the power in them, you know, and we are working in a system that has evolved into something that has become very medicalized and not very patient-centered. And so when you train with this as your philosophy, but then you work over here in this place that doesn't reflect what your philosophical underpinnings are, then you're constantly in this place of tension where you're trying to figure out, do I stay here and make change, or do I work outside of the system where I have more full control over how I practice? And I think all of that is right? Like, people deserve choices and options. What I have chosen is to work in the system to create change, so that those people seeking hospital-based birth, or those people needing hospital-based birth, right? Maybe they weren't intending it, but they end up needing it, have a place that's safe and respectful to come to. So that's I think how I've gotten to, you know, where I am. It's just my understanding of I'm a midwife, you know, through and through to the core. And to me, this is, you know, this is what a midwife is.
And I mean, as a midwife, you obviously work with doctors as well. And they kind of have a different path to their training and, you know, becoming a doctor in, you know, OBGYN. And so have you met a lot of resistance in working in that kind of collaborative team with those providers that maybe have a little bit of a different philosophy?
Some. I think that sort of how one practices is impacted by many factors. And one is how you train, right? So certainly there's a large focus on pathology and the sort of problems that can happen in pregnancy in the training for OBGYN physicians in this nation. But their exposure to what is normal in labor and pregnancy and birth can really vary depending on where they train. And so, you know, residents in my institution will get lectures and training and education on a birth in hands and knees, position changes, and coping in labor and the physiology behind all of that, because they have midwives on faculty, right? And because they have faculty that have also been trained by midwives. So understanding that education is impacting how people later practice helps to keep me here too, right? Because now I'm helping to train future collaborators and the people that are going out there to care for and change our institutions. But also where you practice right now impacts how you practice. And so if the culture of your institution is one in which everyone is induced at 6 a.m. and if you're not delivered at 5 p.m., then you're having a C-section. And we know the evidence shows that you know, there's an increase in numbers of C-sections that are happening right around those times and on certain days. Then I believe it's likely hard to be the only person practicing differently, you know, in a setting like that. And one of the things that has helped me in practicing in the hospital is in creating culture change by working the process, right? By implementing that quality improvement process and doing those like plan, do, study, act cycles and creating an interdisciplinary team where you review the evidence together and you work on a protocol that everyone can come to agreement on and everyone is trained in the protocol. And then you do chart reviews to make sure the protocol is being implemented, right? Like all those steps that we talk about when we're doing the FPQC work, that has helped us to be able to, at our institution, shift culture over the 20 years that I've been there of doing things like routine skin to skin and more physiologic timing of cord clamping and hydrotherapy, intermittent auscultation for low risk laboring women. People are getting up and out of bed. They're not worried like the cord's going to just prolapse, you know, or something, which are real things that I hear from nurses when I travel around the state. Oh, her membranes are ruptured and you let her get out of bed. I don't let somebody do anything. They're grown people who get to do what they want. But yes, it's not unheard of, you know, for that to happen. And so by changing policy, by reviewing evidence, right, by sharing stories, then we start to shift culture. And we started that work through the Reducing Cesarean initiative that we were doing. And I feel like this is an extension of that. We must shift the culture in our birthing institutions in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. I love, yeah. I could listen to you talk about it all day long. hearing you speak, going to the FPQC meetings, this is something that has been an opportunity provided to me by the role that I have at, you know, at my job. But I never had these opportunities before as a bedside nurse, or maybe I didn't seek them out as much, but it's very empowering. It's very motivational. And, you know, I have to keep doing the things like this in order to keep that motivation alive. Because it, you know, you bring it back to your facility, your entity, and you meet obstacles and challenges, and it can be frustrating and not everybody wants to get on board. But, you know, I keep going back and listening to people like you, and others at the FPQC just talk about how important it is and different ways to address it. And you guys are so creative and you have so many awesome resources. So, anyone that is loves their field and is interested in professional development, I mean, these are the things that really ignite that fire. So I really recommend all of these types of opportunities to my colleagues and my staff, because it's the way that people get excited again.
We have a real issue with burnout.
Yeah.
Right. In our profession.
Yes.
And, you know, we conducted some workforce analysis for midwives in the US. And when I see the rate at which people are leaving the profession, right, it scares me. It scares me because you won't have people who have 20 years of experience because they're never going to get there. And when people ask what has sustained you in your profession, for sure, it has been being involved in my professional organization. I am surrounding myself with people who are innovative, who are active, who are engaged in doing the work, and that helps to feed my purpose and my mission. And we spoke about this earlier before we started. If you don't love what you do, then why are you doing it? And so if you've gotten to this place where you don't feel like you are loving what you're doing, you can leave or you can try and find that purpose again.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I have witnessed the burnout and you have to really, we have had to get really creative about engagement. You know, what can we do to re-engage our staff? You know, and so, and I like these quality initiatives and getting people to be nurse champions, you know, have one of your peers be the champion for the initiative. Go tell a friend. Go talk to your colleagues about, you know, why we're doing this and why it's so important to the women that we're caring for, because that's mm-hmm. really what we got in this, you know, to begin with. So, I wanted to lastly ask you, have you in your own practice or, you know, in working with the FPQC and doing the respectful maternity care trainings, have you seen or witnessed any significant changes or people that came back to you and said, you know, we implemented this and this is what happened and it was amazing and we can't believe the change it's made?
It's still early, right? We're still pretty early. But people like you, right? People saying, wow, that really impacted me. And now I am motivated to make this change in the institution. We are at that place and we are hearing a lot of that, right? Every single one of those trainings that we held, I think we trained 120, you know, people throughout the state of Florida in how to implement these respect workshops. They left those sessions saying, I will do something differently. You know, and at the end of those workshops, we asked them in the next, you know, 30 days, you know, what can you do differently or what do you commit to? And for some of them, it was scheduling trainings for all of their teams. And for others, it was how I'm going to call things out a little differently when I witness actions that are disrespectful in, you know, in my workplace, how I'm going to hold people accountable. And that's part of shifting the culture that we talk about, you know, in those workshops, things like having a zero tolerance for disrespect, you know, policy, and, you know, in our workplaces, or just giving people feedback on what went well and maybe what didn't go so well in order to help to shift change. So that immediate feedback has been received very clearly, for sure.
And I think one thing that you all talked about is standing up for each other in your workplace. And if someone sees something and says something and then gets resistance, you stand behind your colleague and say, no, she's right, you know, and what she said is right. And this isn't something that we should tolerate, and kind of the unity on the, on the unit in regards to, you know, respectful maternity care and zero tolerance. I think that, for me, that was huge, because I have witnessed, you know, burnout that can lead to kind of every man for himself and survival of the fittest in kind of mentality. And I think if we go back to that unity of standing up for each other and really fighting for each other when we see something that's not right, I think that's very powerful. And I really loved that you guys touched on that as well at the training.
So the workshop that we use is one that was created by the International Confederation of Midwives, and it's available for free on their website, and it's called the Respect Workshop. And they recognized quite some years ago that there was an issue with respectful maternity care internationally, right? Like this is an issue all over the world. And so they created this workshop that's very interactive. And you've mentioned some of the activities that we engaged in, you know, during the workshop. And we know from adult learning theory that people learn better in those kinds of interactive environments. And we were reviewing lots of different workshops that are out there. And certainly some may be a little more convenient to implement, right? Like there might be some that people can do on their own time and they can, you know, complete modules. But if you have the opportunity to engage with people live and even for a short period of time, working through some of these kinds of activities that we did, where people share experiences of disrespect when they do role modeling, you know, what respectful care looks like and what disrespectful care might look like, you know, that can be, that can be really powerful. And so I just wanted to highlight that, that resource that's available out there for folks. But I really liked that it includes disrespect that's happening amongst peers and colleagues, and not only the patient perspective. How can we expect people to care for people in a respectful way if they're not being treated with dignity and respect in their workplace? Yes. Yeah.
1,000%. I love that. Well, in addition to the respect workshop that you just mentioned, you have the respectful maternity care training. Are you going to continue doing those throughout the state? The training.
So we have one more scheduled.
Okay.
We have one more scheduled that will precede our mid-project meeting in April. And then what we're hoping is that folks will take that information and start to run with it, right? I've certainly enjoyed doing the workshops, and I hope that I have, you know, more opportunities in other initiatives. When we've worked on it, other states kind of follow, and sometimes we get invited, you know, to present at other states to help them implement similar activities. And so who knows what might will come, you know, in the future. Yeah.
And if anyone's listening to this and maybe their hospital is not participating in the initiative or they're not in Florida, is there any resources that you can recommend to them? I guess we could direct them to the FPQC website and the Mother Focused Care Initiative tab with all the great resources there. But is there anything else that you would recommend?
So for sure, that's a great place to start. One of the principles of quality improvement is, steal shamelessly. And so we're not about recreating any, you know, you don't need to make something new. Many state perinatal quality collaboratives have begun work in the birth equity space, including respectful maternity care. Illinois has done some of this work. New York has done some of this work. California, and certainly we have many references on our website in the FPQC area. And as I mentioned, the International Confederation of Midwives has the whole respect workshop and a train the trainer toolkit on their website as well. AWON has amazing resources on respectful maternity care. And I would be remiss not to mention all of the work that AWON has been doing. Their Respectful Maternity Care Toolkit is phenomenal. I was so impressed. I was first introduced to it when two speakers from AWON actually came to the ACNM annual meeting in Orlando last year and presented their work. And I've just been so impressed with what they have put together. And so they have amazing resources. ACOG also has some e-modules. And so some folks have been using that, especially to help to train their physicians. And they have several modules available on their website as well.
Okay. That's great. And I hope that everyone listening takes a little piece of this with them. And maybe we, you know, ignited something in someone with this episode, and they can take that back to their place of work or wherever they are and carry it forward and implement something different. So I really appreciate you agreeing to speak with us today. And we're really excited about the relaunch of this podcast and for you to be our first guest. So thank you so much. And I think Bria has one last question.
I do. Thank you so much, Shannon and Dr. Brumley. I have one question that we're going to be asking all of our podcast guests. And so, Dr. Brumley, you've had a varied career. You've worked with all types of professionals. But is there one career life hack that you think all our listeners should know?
I thought about this. You know, the things that have been most important to me have not been life hacks, right? Like foundational, you know, values, my work is mission driven, you know, the simple things like making sure you're eating a healthy diet and getting rest and like that, you know, all the stuff your grandma told you, like that stuff is real for sure. But if I thought if there's anything that I do that maybe could be thought of as like a career hack, it has been being sure that I follow thought leaders on social media. And so I don't use social media only as like a source of like, you know, entertainment, but I follow people who I think are leading the way in the spaces that I want to lead the way and are going to help me to think differently about all of the things. And maybe I won't agree with them, but I want to know, I want to know what they're saying, what they're publishing, you know, the meetings that they're going to, like, this is how I get information. Or some of it, at least, in that space.
I think I'm going to take your advice. I think I will do that more, too. I definitely could use
Thank
that.
You.
That is great advice, Dr. Brumley. Thank you so much. This was such a wonderful conversation. Shannon, you had some great questions. And Dr. Brumley, you surely delivered with just a variety of resources that we can share and pull from. You gave us some really great actionable insights. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
This was really a pleasure.
Absolutely. For all of our listeners, you can go to a1.org/podcast to read Dr. Brumley's full bio, to download the resources that she shared with us today, or even to re-listen to the episode. I definitely want to give a huge thanks to Shannon and to all of our listeners for tuning in, because without you, we wouldn't be here. Your support is very important to us, and we'd be honored if you share today's episode with a colleague or with a friend. We also want to express our gratitude for the invaluable support of our sponsors. And to ensure that you receive the next episode when it airs later this month, subscribe to A1 on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Spotify. Thank you again so much for tuning in. We thank you for your time. Be well and stay safe.